It's been less than 2 weeks since the start of the war in Iran. There's broad support for the U.S.-Israeli military campaign among Israeli Jews. More than 90% say they approve of the war in a new poll. One explanation is their strong desire after years of conflict for any solution that might provide Israelis with a better sense of security. Polls in the United States tell a very different story. A Quinnipiac survey on Monday found that more than half of respondents oppose the war, and almost three-quarters disapprove of sending ground troops into Iran. A view from the heartland helps explain why. This new phase of conflict in the Middle East has jolted global energy markets. Farmers in Iowa, our reporter Harry Brunius writes, are already facing a corresponding spike in fertilizer prices. When war breaks out in distant lands, it doesn't take long for the home front to feel the impact. It's Thursday, March 12th. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning. I'm Kurt Schillinger. First, our curation of news briefs from our writers around the world. Many of these are developing stories. Find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs or on our app. Countries agreed to release 400 million barrels of emergency oil reserves. The unanimous decision by the 32 members of the International Energy Agency marks the largest coordinated oil release in the group's history. It is meant to ease shortages and rising prices caused by the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran. Ship traffic through the Strait of Hormuz, a route that normally carries about 20% of the world's oil shipments, has nearly stopped, worsening the disruption. Officials say the move might help markets in the short term, but restoring shipping through the strait is key to stabilizing global oil supplies. Southeast Asian governments seek to reduce financial fallout from the Middle East conflict. Many countries in the region are heavily dependent on oil and gas imports. Thailand told government staff to work from home, while the Philippines cautioned officials to avoid all non-essential travel to conserve energy resources, according to the Financial Times. The Vietnamese government asked companies to have employees work remotely and for the public to carpool or cycle whenever possible. Indonesia is considering boosting federal fuel subsidies to help bring down soaring oil and gas prices. Also, soldiers have been deployed in Johannesburg to address organized crime. The move comes after President Cyril Ramaphosa's speech to the nation last month, when he said organized crime is now the most immediate threat to South Africa's democracy and vowed to send the army into the streets. The army will operate under police command during the deployment in Johannesburg, focused on fighting gang violence and illegal mining. Now, today's Monitor stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com or our app for the latest news. American farmers are seeing fertilizer prices spike as oil supply is choked off by Iran's threats to shipping in the Strait of Hormuz in response to attacks by the U.S. and Israel. It's a sign of how the war is affecting the global economy, including spring planting. Harry Brunius reports from Plant City, Florida for the Monitor. For years, Iran's government has doled out scholarships to African students to help build political goodwill on the continent. Now, those students find themselves increasingly affected as the conflict widens. Contributor Denai Nesta Kupemba reports from Yerevan, Armenia, for the Monitor. Prominent academics have resigned or are under investigation as a result of details emerging from the latest Epstein Files release. As more information about the late sex offender's relationship to higher education comes out, several institutions are tightening their fundraising practices. iReporter reports for the Monitor. Sweden took in nearly 200,000 Syrians during the Arab Spring and Syrian Civil War, But now that the Assad regime is gone, the government wants them to go home. For those who've built a new life in Sweden, that's not a small request. Contributor Tanya Ragu reports from Malmö, Sweden for The Monitor. The film Sinners, directed by Ryan Coogler, has received a record number of Oscar nominations and is a contender for Best Picture. The multi-layered movie, which explores African-American history and music, has added to the cultural dialogue around what makes a great movie and who gets to make it. Ken Macon writes for The Monitor. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on how Britain is scoring a win for equality. Britain's parliamentary democracy, one of the oldest in the world, has its quirks. For more than 1,000 years, its kings and queens have presided atop a pyramid of lords, earls, viscounts, and other layers of nobility. Alongside elected members of the House of Commons, these titled and often wealthy peers have held hundreds of hereditary seats in Parliament's upper House of Lords for centuries. Undemocratic, overcrowded, dominated by silly, archaic practices, and unrepresentative of the British population, is how one reform-minded member has described the chamber. But all that is about to change. On Tuesday, Parliament adopted a bill abolishing the remaining quota of 92 seats that can be automatically filled by the heirs of titled peers. The Act fulfills one of Prime Minister Keir Starmer's election pledges, completing a process started by his predecessor Tony Blair, who removed more than 600 seats in 1999. This week's shift signifies a major break with the past. Supporters have argued that nobility's relative independence from shifting electoral politics and interests has provided stability and safeguarded democracy. The change raises questions for those concerned about Britain's storied traditions. But it also offers the opportunity to align politics and society with more egalitarian values that acknowledge equality and intrinsic worth of each individual. Amid increasing cultural diversity and economic inequality, dissolving hereditary privilege could help further dissolve entrenched class divisions and gender disparities dating from feudal times. Titles have typically passed only to men, limiting women's presence until the late 1950s, when prime ministers began nominating lifetime peers whose titles could not be passed on. The principle of hereditary legislating has now been vanquished, declared the Electoral Reform Society on its website this week. However, it is pushing for more, an elected representative upper house that better reflects the country it serves. This sentiment reflects growing public demand for more say in effective governing. Surveys in recent years showed that 28% of British people were dissatisfied with how their government works, and 15% would choose to abolish the monarchy. The royal family appears increasingly responsive to this sentiment. King Charles III has moved to curtail costs and has recently stripped his brother Andrew of all titles and benefits over his alleged connections to the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. And Parliament is considering a Representation of the People bill to extend the vote to 16 and 17-year-olds and widen the range of accepted voter ID. We have a duty to find a way forward, the leader of the House of Lords, Baroness Angela Smith, said this week. The change is not about individuals, she said, but about the underlying principle that no one should sit in our Parliament by way of an inherited title. By its nature, democracy is rarely a finished project. It might now be time for ordinary Britons to claim a greater role in shaping and safeguarding their nation's unique governing system. The stories you have just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com or on our app. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how when we understand that true and lasting substance is spiritual, we gain a clearer understanding of God as the only substance. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/CS Perspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Mackenzie Farkas and Tim Malone.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, United States of America. Copyright 2026.